This week on Boss Barrel Radio, we're going to talk about... Oh, hello? What are you doing in my basement? Take this? Oh, okay. Oh, it's a cease and desist. Just a joke. It's Boss Barrel Radio. I'm Griffin Hoffman, and with me is Jeffrey Brewer. Say your name.
Jeffrey Brewer.
And James Scherer.
Jeffrey Brewer.
Wait a second. No. Now we're going to redo the whole damn thing. Clap on Jeffrey Brewer.
It's okay. We're spooling up, guys. We're spooling up. It's been a while.
Mm-hmm. We're activating the podcasting computer.
The FTL doesn't just fire.
It's running a 3600 RPM hard drive. And MS-DOS.
Touching my Tegra.
I have resorted to installing a lot of like older games that I just want to have at the ready on my on my like 5400 RPM beefcake of a drive. Just so I can have them. Like, I threw Valkyria on there. I threw Bioshock 1 on there. Because I've been going through a weird kind of funk where I feel like playing something, but I don't know what.
Yep.
And yeah. So I just start playing random stuff that I've liked in the past, and I play for like a half hour, and I'm like, that was fun, but how come it's not like making my brain tingle like it's on fire?
That's because you're not using ecstasy this time.
Oh, okay.
It's a critical difference. I don't know if you thought of that one, but... Yeah, no, I think Griff and I have been in the same place where we're just, like, we're looking for something. We're, like, we're searching. We're on a journey. Right. We just can't, we can't land there. Every time I try to play a game, I'm just like, oh, man, I don't know.
Yeah. It's a lot of times of me just standing in front of, like, my shelf and looking.
Yeah, and then I'm like, this is not my beautiful house. This is not my beautiful wife.
It's so interesting that this is striking us all at the same time. And I think that, for me at least, it's because... recently I've played two like super excellent games and I feel like everything else kind of like isn't giving me that immediate like dopamine squirt that I'm requiring. So
squirt. This is a great imagery right there, Jamie.
It's also the name of my indie band. And my psychiatry practice. Like I finished Doom and I've been playing, I just started playing more Overwatch like yesterday. I played some Overwatch the day before, and that game is so good. And
did
like
you,
the
did you
the,
Lucio ball?
I didn't Lucio ball, but I played Lucio.
Did you dopamine
like...
gush over it?
Yeah, pretty much. That's actually the a gusher's flavor.
Oh yeah, delicious.
It's not available in the States yet. But,
it's a huge hit in Japan, though.
You can get it on Amazon UK.
For some reason, in Japan, it. They sell them, but they have the kernel from KFC on the box. Give them big
thumbs up. Actually, it's just stomach acid. That's all it is.
And I guess, like, since we're just talking, can I talk about how I yesterday played Bioshock 1 a little bit?
Yeah.
Nope.
No?
No, you can't?
No, of course you can.
That's not a video game.
Ugh.
So yesterday I loaded
up... It's an audiovisual experience.
How is the Great Chain?
What?
How? Never mind.
I put it on my old spinning plate drive, and I booted it up, and it has aged in a lot of like little interesting ways that I didn't remember, but are very apparent now, especially on PC. So, first of all, there's something about like, especially compared to like Doom, which is like super silky smooth all the time. There's something just about like older games sometimes where just like the panning, just like the mousing is not as smooth as it could be, which is weird. It's like weirdly janky. And then the physics in the game are super weird. Like when like, for example, early in the game, there's a part where a, like you see the Big Daddy for the first time and he he knocks some piece of, like, furniture out of his way, and it goes flying. Whenever anything goes flying in that game, it goes flying at, like, 20 FPS, even though everything else in the shot is at 144 FPS. It's very bizarre looking. And
I don't recall that game being super well optimized for PC when it came out. I don't think they led on PC.
It's bizarre. There are strange discrepancies in terms of, like, the texture quality. So, like, one part of the architecture will be, like, super, super good looking. It'll be right next to something else that you literally have no idea what it could possibly be, especially in 2K. You're like, that could be stone, that could be sand, that could be water. I have no idea. It's just a mess. But the game itself is still, like, in terms of, like, its direction and how it's curated and how you move through the environment, modern games could still learn something from it. Like, I feel like it's still a masterpiece in that regard. It's a little bit janky on PC.
I'm curious if it colored your impressions of Bioshock Infinite, going back to Bioshock.
I was actually going to also throw Infinite on my old hard drive as well and compare the two.
I think you should. I'm very
but
curious.
I don't have any thoughts on that right now. I remember Infinite being very well curated, at least in the beginning, and then kind of just devolving into battle arena after battle arena.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I felt. Like, it had a great, like, half an hour or to an hour introduction, and then just kind of became very much a slog. But I'm just curious if we were all looking at Bioshock through rose-colored glasses, or if that is a better-paced game.
I don't remember Bioshock ever falling apart in terms of the pacing. But I probably will just play through it. Like, I enjoyed what I played yesterday enough that I'll probably just, like, keep on playing it, like, in half-hour chunks. Mm-hmm. So I'll keep you guys updated.
Are you excited to make some weighty moral choices?
Oh, God.
Kill the baby. Eat the baby, save the baby.
I am, because it's going to be bad, guys. It's going to be real bad. Atlas, the first time you see a little sister, he comes through on your radio and he says something hilarious like, "Everything you knew about right and wrong on the surface doesn't count for shit down here."
Because if you do the right thing or the wrong thing, the rewards are pretty much exactly the same.
Yeah. Ah, man. But there's more, actually, something that kind of is seems like it'll be a letdown. Something that actually is exceeding my expectations in terms of what I remember is how they set up what happened in Rapture. I recall never being, like, really told what happened, especially in the beginning of the game. Like, you're just kind of thrust into this universe where everything's gone to hell and no one's really explaining why. But actually, the combination of Atlas's, the first couple of things that he says to you, as well as the first couple of audio logs that you get, actually set up pretty well how, like, you know, splicing was initially used just to, like, further the ideal of Rapture, but then people got addicted to it, and then it screwed up their brains, and everyone's, like, a drug addict, and they kind of explain that a little better than I remember.
Hmm. Whereas I felt like they didn't really provide a lot of rationale for that kind of stuff in Infinite, other than, like, well, we did it in the last game.
Yeah.
Guess we have to have some kind of magic powers.
Yeah, I mean, I in Infinite, though, it wasn't like, oh, these tools that we have are the downfall of our society. It's more just like the politics and the reality bending issues is what's causing these things, not just like mutations and, you know. Oh, excuse me.
Felix has a different opinion.
Well,
I know I am the minority here in not liking Bioshock very much, but Felix, I defer to you.
Yeah, no, I think that Infinite really kind of relied on you having played Bioshock a lot. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's maybe not as good as a standalone product in terms of that, because it very much leans on Bioshock for a lot of its kind of systems and mechanics and stuff, and it only contextualizes them in kind of the scope of, like, the broader Bioshock universe. You know what I mean? Like, it's not they don't really stand alone. Like, I think they maybe do in Bioshock.
Did you guys play Bioshock 2?
Yep.
I did not.
Played through the whole thing.
I did too, and I remember, I mean, that's obviously the least memorable in the trilogy there, but I remember and I would like...
Bullshit! My Sophia Lamb Lives tattoo defers, or is contrary to that thought.
I remember it, though, that it... I think it might be the most fun? Am I, like, completely, like, out of line there? I just remember loving the actual combat in that game, because I feel like that's the only thing that they cared about.
You're absolutely right in that. Like, it took the systems of Bioshock 1 and did the things that you wanted them to do, like being able to dual wield your plasmids and your weapons, and then being able to, like, combine things in interesting ways. So, yeah. But I then say that Infinite, you know, took that to the end zone and made it, you know, much better.
Yeah.
To the end zone. I don't know. I had a hard time with Infinite towards the end. I just got really super bored with the act of actually playing it and was just trying to get to the story bits.
Fair enough. Yeah.
It was, I don't know, but we don't have to go down that road, 'cause nobody's playing that right now anyway. So
sure. I'm curious, Jamie, Jeff, you're charging Jamie with a comparison between Bioshock and Bioshock Infinite. I'm more interested to see if you've finished play through the whole game and your feelings on that back half, which is absolute garbage, like, after the reveal and you have to go become the big daddy. Like, is that where the rose tinted glasses live, in that section where you just remit that from memory, or is there merit to that portion of the game?
Are you asking me?
Yeah, I'm less curious about how it stacks up against Infinite. No, I'm talking about Bioshock.
You remember when you have to become a big daddy for a while?
Kind of.
The whole, like, second half of the game, we have to go do that?
I feel like I conflated that with 2. Oh my god, this is bad.
2 is that you're the big daddy already.
You're already, yeah.
I mean, I've always wanted to be the big daddy, so it on some level, it resonates for me.
Big Daddy, that's fucking sweet.
I'll have to, you know, it's really not fresh in my mind. I'll have to get back to you on that. I don't want to say anything that, because obviously I'm conflating all these games, they're all melding together in my brain, just bad. But
I'm gonna wait for the Vita.
That's called Parkinson's.
Port of the Bioshock. I think
the Vita, yeah.
Oh, Vita Bioshock, yeah. I think it's coming out in a couple months.
Wait. So what system was it? So in my quest to find a game that I wanted to play, I was like, emulators. And then I was like, I remember reading somewhere recently that either the Vita or the PSP or the 3DS, one of them was just recently, like, opened up to emulators or something. Did I completely, like, miss?
Nope. Go for it, Jeff.
Yeah. So, okay. So I'll tell you all three. So the PSP already has a really good emulator that actually runs in Java, oddly enough, called PPSSPP. 3DS has an emulator called Citra, which has recently been demonstrated to boot commercial games and I think is actually running okay. But what you're probably thinking of is a Vita exploit called Henkaku, which literally just requires you to take your Vita and visit a website, and then you can hack your Vita.
Like on the Vita, the website?
Yep, uh-huh. Just go to a website. I don't know if it's been patched or fixed yet, but that's as easy as it was.
I'm fairly certain that Sony has essentially said, we're not touching this.
Really? They're going to leave it?
Yeah.
That's actually huge.
I think it was less of a statement, just like, that exists.
If they would allow that to exist, I would be over the moon with them. Honestly,
I want that.
I want to be able to play Saga Frontier on my Vita, even though nobody likes that game except for me.
I've never played it.
You and Jeremy Parrish.
It's a weird little game. It's like a bit of comfort food for me. It's got a certain charm to it. I love all the characters. I love the sparking of moves. You can learn moves in battle. That's like Saga's hallmark. It's super cool. It's a fun little game. But anyway, so you probably heard about the Vita, Jamie.
I'm gonna do that after this.
You should guinea pig it for us so we know if it's scary.
You do it first.
Fine. I will. I guess I'll just keep on telling you guys about the other things that I've been playing in my search. So I played the DLC for SteamWorld Heist. I bought
How was that?
$5 DLC. That is really interesting. I think it will be good. Interesting choice on their part. They spread out the content for the DLC throughout the three worlds. So
that's my
that
concern.
I guess if you're starting the game, you can buy the DLC and still have access to that new character and the new stages from an early point, which is good. And if you haven't played it, I would recommend that you buy it, buy the DLC, and just go from there, because the stages are, like, spread out.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get the new character almost off the bat. But then if you finish the game, like I had, when you get the DLC, you download it. First of all, good on Nintendo. I don't know if I recall anything like this except in first-party Nintendo games. Uh-huh. You can download the DLC inside the game without... It, like, connects to the store, but you don't really leave the game.
Yeah.
It was more...
I don't think it's unheard of, but go on.
Okay. It's just more seamless than I thought it would be. I thought it would be janky and, like... The bar is so low. Now you are leaving and going to the store.
It's such a low bar.
Now you're going back. But that was pretty seamless. And then when you finish the game and you, you know, jump back in and obviously all your progress is saved, it says, hey... Like a message comes up on the screen. It's like, hey, the new content is spread throughout the game, and you can go and get the new character in the beginning part. So I'm like, oh, okay. So I started, you know, going back, and you can tell which stages are new because they have a little icon next to them that says, like, it's like the shape of the new character's head. And I guess that's how you know that, like, that's the stage wasn't there before. And now it is. So I went back and got the new character, played a few missions with him. He has a really unique ability where every time he kills someone, he builds up a charge, and the charges, as far as I can tell, just keep building. And then you can spend the charges on free actions that he has.
Oh,
and the two free actions that he has to start, and I assume that you'll get more as the game goes on, is... like an accessory attack that's free or a heal. And it's like a really interesting playstyle because you're actually thinking like, do I want to kill this guy with another character, or do I want to wait and have him be killed by the new character so that he can like build up a charge, and then I can use that charge in an interesting way. So it makes you think about the stages a little different. And the new stages in the beginning world with him are solid. You know, they're really easy because, like, I'm like max leveled.
That's
and,
my concern.
But there's also a new zone at the end.
Oh, there is?
Like, there's when I jumped in, it told me like a message came up saying there are new stages everywhere and you have to go back to get the new character. But then when I was in my ship, one of the characters was like, "Hey, there's a black hole," and the black hole is like where world 4 should be. Ooh. So like maybe there's like super cool, difficult stuff coming up. I don't know. We'll
I
see.
Hope so.
Endless yeah. Run arena. So with this new character that builds up charges after killing people, is there ever an instance where the charge retrogrades and goes back inside him instead of releasing?
And then he goes back into the womb, is your asking?
Yeah, the robot womb. Sucks him all the way back, especially if he's got a full charge. Fully loaded.
Exactly.
That's a little inside joke, people. Pre-podcast conversation.
It's about Jeff's penis.
It's about my penis. So that's... I'm a little disappointed that they're interspersed like that, because I feel like I have to start a new game to fully appreciate it. But I love SteamWorld Heist. My problem is all my characters are level 10. I got 3 stars on all the levels, so like I've done everything. So I feel like redoing it's gonna be, yeah.
Yeah, yep. I think you played that game to death even more than Griffin or I did. So for you, maybe wait like a year until you want to play it again.
Yeah, or like then, another DLC comes out.
Yeah, and then it'll be waiting for you. I think it's cool. I'm looking forward to playing more. I also played Bucky O'Hare a lot. That game's great. And
Treasure.
What else did I play? Played some Valkyria Chronicles.
Did you finish Inside, Jamie? Because we can co-talk about that if you
want.
How'd you like it?
I didn't get, like, the good ending. I got the bad ending, I think.
I didn't get, like, the super, super secret ending, but fuck that.
can we just, like, talk about the ending? Can we just start with that? Or should we lead up to it?
Maybe we should lead up to it a little bit, because that the ending was what excited me.
Yeah, I'd ask you guys to maybe hold off on that since I haven't played it, and, you know, now that it's coming for PS4... I'll probably play it there.
Okay.
All right, didn't know that. I'm sorry, Griff.
I hear there's some weird twist to it, but yeah,
there is a weird
if you
twist.
Want to talk around it,
and I
there
love quite, the weird twist.
Yeah, you just wait.
The you weird twist wait. May redeem. I didn't think the game was bad by any stretch, and it was very clever. It has an approach to puzzles that is like it's spare in like the number of elements that they use, but it's always like satisfyingly tricky. Did you feel that way, Jamie? Hmm.
100%, and it's definitely going to be on my game of the year list. I think, just in terms of the art, and the.
So, let me ask you guys a few questions about Inside, since I only have a very cursory knowledge of it. It is the sequel, but like the second game from the developers who made Limbo.
Limbo,
correct?
Yep, it's by Playdead. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, that sounds right. And how similar is it to Limbo? Like, can you kind of make
very
some comparisons
similar.
There?
It is okay. a
very,
sequel.
Very similar. Yeah.
It is 100% a sequel slash the same game.
Yeah, okay. Like it may be even in the same universe.
Yeah.
It's not.
In
clear.
Fact, it was obvious to me from the get go that it was the same universe. You know, like,
because of
that's,
some
that's
shared
like,
elements.
Yeah, like within the first 20 minutes, I was thinking to myself. I mean, I just was operating on the assumption that this was the same universe, maybe even the same protagonist.
Not that I could tell you shit about what really happened in Limbo, because that's a weird effing game.
Yeah.
Did both of you really enjoy Limbo?
Yeah.
I liked Limbo a lot. For Inside, I like this game too. I was put off by, I didn't like how it was a side-scroller, but it was like, you were moving through a 3D world, and sometimes I got really annoyed because I would see elements in the world, either in the foreground or in the background, that I wanted to go investigate, but you just can't. Did you have this experience, Jamie, where you're like, why am I moving left and right when, like, there is another house down the road?
I totally get that. I didn't have that response. I just appreciated what they did with the aspect ratio and, like, not the aspect ratio, like, the depth of field.
Mm-hmm.
I just appreciated that from like, an artistic standpoint. I didn't really think, like, oh, I want to go over there, because I kind of, I at least I always thought that, I knew immediately that that thing that I was intrigued by was not something that I could go see.
I think for me, it just kind of got in the way of world building a little bit, because I was like, why am I doing this? Like, why am I going into this thing as opposed to that other thing, which looks less bad? go ahead.
To circle back to the artistic angle on things, Limbo, known for its, like, black and white color scheme, I remember trailers for Inside being kind of featured around a grayscale with some kind of, like, surprising pops of color here and there. Was that accurate for the full game, or did they make some changes?
It's very much
pretty accurate. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a muted color palette. You know, less is more, but it's not as restrained as Limbo. It's not just like silhouette and black and white.
It's like they turned the contrast all the way down on like 95% of what you're seeing at any one time, and like 5% there's like a splash of color or something.
Yeah, and it's also go ahead.
Oh no, please.
I was going to say, it's also definitely got more, as Jamie was saying, kind of depth of field than Limbo did. Like, Limbo was very, and I think this is part of what initially irked me about the game. Limbo was very, like, two-dimensional. Like, there maybe was some depth going on there, but, like, you were kind of stuck on a plane and moving.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you're like, it's 2.5D-ish. Like, it is mm-hmm. very much a 3D world that you're moving two-dimensionally in.
Gotcha. Does this art style inform the gameplay? Like, in Limbo, you know, it's black and white, so you can't see the things that are hiding in the darkness. Does this grayscale have any impact on how you play?
Hmm.
I wouldn't say the grayscale, but the 2.5D-ness certainly does. There are elements of the stages, enemies, that will exit your plane, but you still have to monitor their movement as they're coming back towards you.
Okay.
In like this kind of 2.5D way. I don't think it's really a spoiler to say that at certain instances in the game there are dogs that are after you.
Yeah.
And they will chase you in your 2D plane, but they
Thanks, I'm not playing this game anymore.
They'll leave the plane and like as part of a puzzle, you have to take into account their movement as they're out of your plane while you're kind of planning where to go. So that aspect certainly informs But in terms of like the in terms of like the chiaroscuro, like what you can see, I don't feel like that really.
No,
I don't know. What do you think, Jeff?
No, I agree with you, Jamie. It's so they do. It's not like the three dimensional aspect of the world is useless, because it is true that there are like instances in the game where you need to, stuff is coming at you from the background, and you need to be aware of it and manipulate it based on your movements on the 2D plane. So it's not like their decision to be 3D is a worthless choice, if that makes any sense. And they use that to interesting effect, I think. There'll be dudes trying to shoot at you sometimes, and just stuff will happen that makes that relevant, which is cool.
Okay, last question.
Yep.
Is this just a child murder simulator?
To some degree.
Just like Limbo.
You don't always get murdered. Sometimes you just get stunned. But sometimes in the process of getting stunned, you're also murdered.
Don't tase me?
What's that?
So don't tase me.
Yes, don't tase me, bro. Yeah, you know, you get killed a lot. And it's certainly macabre. And it's kind of... I mean, sometimes it's kind of, like, funny in the way that you get killed. And sometimes it's just gruesome.
Yeah.
But what was I going to say about it?
I was just going to say, there's a point that happens really early in the game. It's like the first thing that you see really in the game, besides like a forest. And the second I saw it, I was like, this game is amazing. And
was it worms or whatever?
No, it was like literally like maybe 30 to 45 seconds into the game. Like the first thing you see happen that isn't just like a tree. Do you remember what I'm saying?
Is it
no?
People?
Yeah. It has to involve, it involves people. And the second I saw that, I was like, not only did I know that this was the Limbo, or, you know, it's up for debate, but I felt that this was the Limbo universe, and immediately it was giving me more context for the Limbo universe than I had in the entirety of Limbo, and, like, widening the story a little bit, and just making it, it's basically... It's like Haruki Murakami. He just writes the same book over and over again, but like sometimes it gets like a lot better. Sometimes it gets worse, but sometimes it gets a lot better, and I feel like that's what they're doing.
Yeah. I would tend to agree with that. I mean, it is very... There's a lot of overlap with Limbo in terms of just kind of like motifs and overall feel and vibe. It does enough to distinguish itself. And I think that there is a cool element that is introduced. I don't know if it's a spoiler to talk about it. Without getting too involved, it involves like controlling other people, which is cool, and it's used to interesting effect. It's not overused. There is one portion in the game that I felt was a little too big. Do you remember, Jamie, when you go into the place with the elevator and you have to like get a lot of things?
Yeah,
that annoyed me. Even though it wasn't so bad when I actually did it, I was like, ugh.
I think you're right. I took a break at that point. Like I saw the breadth of that. Of that stage, I guess I'll call it, and I was like, this is a good time to take a break. And then I came back to it, and when I came back to it, I guess I was like,
yeah, and it wasn't
refreshed
bad.
And so it wasn't bad at all, but like that's a good break point, I would say. If
there's
you're gonna play this game in two chunks, that's probably a good place to stop.
Yeah,
I would say that two chunks of 2 hours or two chunks of an hour and a half is like all you'll need for this.
Yeah, and there's some definitely like memorable moments. Like when I first started, I was like, okay, this is Limbo 2. There are some cool moments. There's some interesting set pieces around enemy encounters, which I think will really stand out and be memorable. Certainly something happens in water that's really cool. Definitely the ending is like, again, I don't even want to really get into it too much, but it throws a really fun curveball, that feels very... good.
Fun is one way to put it.
It's
for me.
I mean,
it was extremely upsetting, and that's why
interesting.
I was wondering if I got the, because I know there's a couple endings, and I'm wondering if like the good ending is substantially different. Because
I wouldn't
for
call
me,
this
like,
a good ending.
What?
I wouldn't call it a good ending. It was a very interesting ending. It was a kinetic ending, if you will.
Yeah. I don't remember finishing a video game and having that feeling.
Like, no. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very different.
It is very different. I think that you get very invested in characters, Jamie. Mm-hmm. So you probably were, like, sucked in and distressed by what was happening, whereas I was more just like, this is fascinating from, like, a world perspective and, like, the way in which it changes the way I'm playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't as distressed as maybe you were.
I don't think Shannon was either. Shannon watched me play the entire thing. It's good game to play with significant others because there's puzzles and I feel like her reaction to the ending was maybe closer to your reaction, but for me, I was just kind of like, "What the fuck?"
Yeah, it's weird because it's kind of like it's a spoiler, like in terms of like you're working towards something and then you're like, oh. Like, is this what I was working towards?
Okay, stop it. I'm gonna stop it here because I want to go play this. So
yeah, good point. No, it's fine. I don't. Hopefully, we haven't given you too much here.
I don't think we have.
Yeah, I know that other podcasts that I've listened to have kind of nudged a little bit closer towards what happens, but I still like don't want to hear it.
I understand. I know that you're very vulnerable to hype, Griff. So I don't want to overhype things for you. It's interesting. I think you'll get something.
Right.
Yeah, at the very least,
my initial thought is just like, I don't like Limbo. Never liked the game. Don't want to play this. But since there's so much talk around the ending, I think I just have to go do it.
Yeah,
and it's only 4 hours is what Jamie said, so I can stomach that.
Yeah. Jeff, what would you say? 4 hours? Let me actually check. I can tell you.
Yeah, you can check your Steam playtime. I would say it's 3 to 4 hours. It's not a long game. It's definitely got some Limbo-y puzzle solving. I would say that, for the most part, the physics are a little less fiddly than they were in Limbo.
Oh, that's nice. That's really nice.
There are a couple... There's a moment involving having to hide behind stuff at certain intervals that is very frustrating.
Okay.
I mercifully got through it quickly, but the intended solution is really not cool.
Gotcha.
I'm pretty sure you know what I'm talking about, Jamie.
Yeah.
Yeah, where you have to not stop the thing, and you have to just time it.
Yeah, and there's a couple times where, especially in the beginning, there are a couple timing elements where actually, like, what my gut was telling me to do was what the game wanted me to do, and I should have just, like, I should have been playing it. I import a lot of puzzle-solving techniques from other games mm-hmm. into games that I play, and this was, this is to this game's credit, that a lot of that mentality that I had like actually didn't vibe with what it wanted me to do.
Yeah.
Which is good because this is like a different way because sometimes in this game like the way to solve puzzles is to like just let things happen or just wait or something like that.
Sort of. Yeah. It's just a very different feel. They're not puzzles in like a gamey sense. They're puzzles in sort of like a go with the world, I feel like, if that makes any sense.
And in some instances, they have an essence of, like, terror and fear to them, which is really cool.
For sure.
All right, well, speaking of terror and fear and puzzles and gaminess, Jeff, you want to talk a little bit about Zero Time Dilemma?
Sure.
It's on your list.
Maybe you can help me out with this a little bit, too.
And I'm going to keep some time pressure here, since we've talked a lot
off-air
about it. So
I
think we can distill our thoughts here pretty succinctly.
For sure, yeah. So Zero Time Dilemma, for people who don't know, is the third and final, presumably final, entry in the Zero Escape series. Previously, 999 and Virtue's Last Reward are our first and second entry. And it had pretty big shoes to fill. It's a visual novel, and the premise is 9 strangers trapped in a place, and they have to get out, and stuff's going on beneath the surface they don't know about, and the reason it has such big shoes to fill is because Virtue's Last Reward was an absolute mindfuck of a game.
In a good way.
Yeah, in a great way. That opened a lot of people's eyes to visual novels as, like, a legitimate medium.
Definitely me.
Yeah. And to some degree, me as well. I had a little bit of experience, but playing that game was awesome. And lots of amazing, like, Michael Crichton-esque twists and turns. And, you know, it had an ending which really set up a really fantastic story. Time jumping, and again, this is difficult for non-story people to understand. But basically, you know, it had an ending that set up a story between the first and second games, which was supposed to address a ton of questions.
Right.
And so this game, you know, already starts out with huge expectations, and I think it did a pretty good job of addressing them. Maybe not the greatest job.
Any three-part series, it is potentially the weakest of the three, but still a good, still arguably a good game. A very good game.
And a game that almost didn't exist. I think it's important to remember that this is a game that was very clearly constructed on a shoestring budget. It was a passion project made for fans. It wouldn't have been made if it weren't for American fans. But it is a game that has some issues. So I guess kind of to get into some of the nitty-gritty, the previous games were kind of more of a straight visual novel. Lots of reading text, and interspersed with escape room segments, which are essentially like you're trapped in a room, find the clues to solve puzzles.
Unravel
and
the puzzle,
Yes. The puzzles are still there in this game. They're still great. However, some
other things better, I think, than the last game.
Yeah, more intuitive overall. Yep. They don't, you really don't need to consult like a crazy guide to get them all, which is good.
Or have like an innate knowledge of prime numbers and mathematics. Yeah,
exactly. But they changed some other things. So I guess inspired by the Telltale series, the creator, Uchi Kosuke, or whatever the heck his name is, kind of leaned more towards cutscenes as a storytelling method. Mm-hmm. The problem is they're super janky, and the acting is a little bit uneven. And also it's using cutscenes with voice dialogue kind of necessarily detracts from their ability to flesh out concepts and stories. So I felt like the game would sometimes just be like peppered with interesting philosophical or mathy concepts that I was aware of. Like they drop like the Monty Hall problem in there, which people, you know about that, Griff?
I remember they referenced it in the game, yes.
Yeah, so and the Monty Hall problem, Jamie, do you know about the Monty Hall problem? The goats?
Nope. No.
You read Curious Incident of Dog and Nighttime, right?
A long time ago.
Okay, so the Monty Hall problem is basically that you're on a game show, there's three doors, and behind one of them is a car, and behind the other two are goats. And they're like, okay, choose the door to open, and then you choose the door, and they're like, wait a minute, we're going to open one of the goat doors. Do you want to change your answer? And as it turns out, if you run the probability, you actually have a better chance of getting the car if you change your answer.
Huh.
Yeah, don't worry about it. It's a math thing that people get tripped up on. But this game just drops it. They're like, there's like a chapter in the game called the Monty Hall problem, and they're like, hey, do the Monty Hall problem. We're not going to explain it to you or anything, but it's a thing. And like that's, I feel like they do that a lot in this game. Like there's a lot of interesting stuff that comes up, but just isn't really fleshed out.
I'd say I think they did actually give it more context than Zero Virtue's Last Reward, because typically since it's all written in that game, you would have them drop that kind of, it's like, oh, it's Schrodinger's cat, and then it's like, would you like to read more about Schrodinger's cat? And then you read more about it. Like they would kind of just present it like it's common knowledge. In this game, you're right, they do say, okay, Monty Hall problem, and then they do, you know, explain it afterwards and kind of tell you what happened there. And then there's also the dossiers that give you more information.
I guess there's the dossiers, yeah. I just felt like there were a lot of like threads that were started in this game that I don't really know why. Like, there's a section in the game, and this isn't a big spoiler, I don't think, where you are presented with a button, and they're like, do you push this button or not? And it's just like a meaningless choice, and one of the choices you make will cause an explosion for some reason.
So good.
And it's like, why is this here? And there's some interesting stuff going on. This game, so the other games would kind of emphasize that, you know, depending on what choice you make, the outcome will be different, and you can explore different outcomes and kind of see how that affects the story. This game still keeps that. It also introduces chance as a mechanic, which I think is intriguing, but not maybe fully utilized.
Yeah, or explained.
Yeah.
Because there are moments where you need to fulfill certain requirements that are obfuscated and you know, you can just churn trying to figure out what you're supposed to do with no direction.
Yeah, and sometimes like you are presented with a situation where a chance of something happening is really low, and you're like, okay, so clearly I have to do something before this will happen.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, actually you just keep trying.
Yep.
So I think there's a certain like lack of focus that kind of came through the product in general, I think. And I think that it just feels a little disjointed due to some of the presentation elements, like the fact that the entire game is made up of fragments. So the story is played entirely out of time, and you just kind of choose times in the story to play from three different timelines.
Well, that's kind of what VLR becomes.
It does. I think that this game front-loads that, which maybe hurts it a little. Because I think that the VLR benefits from that reveal.
Right. Gotcha. Going through that set path and then having the expansion, whereas in this, it's just like, okay, here you go to town, pick your path, American audience, you love open worlds.
Yeah, and I think to some degree the stakes didn't feel very high sometimes because of that.
Yeah, yep.
It was more just like, okay, well, I guess I need to finish painting this picture, as opposed to like, man, I wonder how I'm going to get out of this situation.
Right.
So that's one thing. I think also some of the reveals that they did set up, some of them were really cool and emotionally effective, whereas others kind of fell a little bit flat. And there was just no way they were going to tie up all the plot threads that were introduced in VLR. And
yeah.
I think it was a valiant effort. But I think that if you really wanted a game that was going to do that, you needed, like, double the development time and double the budget.
Right.
But, yeah, I think it's worth playing. And, Griff, I'm going to pass it to you because I've talked about it for a bit here. But I enjoyed it. It was never going to be everything I ever wanted, but I'm glad it was made.
Yep. I couldn't agree with you more, Jeff. You said everything. I do think that there is... I was first frustrated with some of the character interactions that were going on, and I was, you know, that, like, this doesn't make any sense. And it didn't feel like it was a, oh, this will be explained later, like, oh, this is just bad design. But I was happy to see that there was some context given to that as the game, you know, cleared itself up at the end. But then, like, mid-game two, or not mid-game, but, you know, towards the back third of it, there were some moments that I thought were just, like, profoundly... emotional in a really nuanced way if you looked
for sure
into the situation. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then,
one,
you know, there's,
I mean,
also the
comes to mind.
Yeah, I think you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But then there's also the MacGuffin, which was just like absolute horseshit.
Yeah, there were some definite issues with the game. I mean, it's not quite an experience as VLR was, for a lot of reasons, but
yep.
I'm glad it's there.
Yeah, me too. I enjoyed it. I'm happy I paid for it. And you know, I feel like since VLR was free through PlayStation Plus, I'm happy to, you know, give full price to this and have a copy of it forever.
Yeah, and I would love for that creator to continue being able to make games and explore interesting concepts, because I think that he's a really cool dude who has really interesting ways of thinking about stories. So
yeah,
I'm excited to see more production from him. I hope that it happens.
Yes, sir.
I figured I might as well just transition over to another visual novel that I checked out.
Yeah, please do.
Just to keep things rolling here. So I checked out Valhalla, or VA-11-Hall-A, which is described as a cyberpunk bartending waifu simulator, which is about right. So I would say it leans more heavily into the visual novel side of things than the Zero Escape series. It is very much a visual novel, interspersed with moments of making drinks. So the basic premise is you are a female bartender who is serving patrons of this city, which apparently is actually modeled after Venezuela right now, where the creator lives. Yeah, it's modeled after the economic conditions and the horrible civil strife in Venezuela, with a cyberpunk bent to it. And it's actually really cool. I didn't really know what to expect going in, but I think it very much plays slice of life-ish. You're this bartender who's trying to pay her rent, and, you know, you need to make the right drinks for patrons and make sure you don't buy too much shit. And, like, you know, there are multiple endings depending on whether or not you can make your rent and things like that. But pretty much it just smoothly plays out like a story that you might sit down with, like, a, you know, cup of tea and read or whatever. And it's, I would say the storytelling is pretty good. It has its moments of unevenness, and it can sometimes feel a little bit juvenile, although most of the time it doesn't. But other times it manages like a great level of maturity. It just kind of is up and down. But the characters are cool. The relationships are cool. There's a lot
Who
of
Who is the best
moments.
Waifu?
Gosh, I don't know. I don't remember their names anymore, to be honest.
cat lady.
So there's Dorothy, who's like
beefy
the 13-year-old sex android.
Okay.
There's cat ear lady, whose name I can't remember right
of
now.
Course,
I think her
of
name
course.
Is Say, maybe? No, Say is the blue-haired girl with the
Stella.
Eye patch.
Okay.
Stella, yeah. Stella is cat lady. Say is blue-haired girl with eye patch.
Where's middle-aged mechanic chick lady that's kind of a tomboy? Is she? Who's that?
No, she's not in there. She's not in there. No, but the characters are cool.
DLC.
And it has some good humor moments around, like, a bunch of talking dogs that run a company together and just silly little bits like that.
Okay.
It's a fun game. It's a fun world to be in, even if the writing doesn't land 100% of the time. I think it lands enough.
How long is it?
It's probably about... anywhere between, I'd say, maybe close to 10 hours, maybe a little less. Maybe
Jesus.
8.
That's
yeah,
a lot of hours.
It's a big game. Maybe I'm Maybe. No, no. You know, maybe it's only six. Maybe it's only six. I'll look at my playtime later. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not huge. It is a long game, though. By the end, I was just kind of powering through the drinks just to get to the conclusion.
Yeah. So how is the actual game part of it? Like, you're combining arbitrary things together to make something that appeals to somebody, or is there some actual, like, this person is a bartender and made things make sense?
So it's mostly like, here, give me this drink, or give me something that meets these parameters, and you can, like, look up those parameters and find a drink. Sometimes the game will test you. It'll be like, oh, man, this character looks really down right now. Like, what was their favorite drink again? I don't remember. And those moments can...
Methamphetamines.
What's that?
Methamphetamines.
Methamphetamines. And sometimes those moments can be, like, cool and kind of rewarding, and sometimes they can be really frustrating, because it's like, I don't fucking know what their favorite drink is. Like, that was 2 hours ago.
Right.
And it doesn't really telegraph very well, like, what it wants you to remember. So that can be a little frustrating. I mean, if you fuck it up, then you might miss out on like, an element of the ending. Mm-hmm. But I would say that the gamey part of it is pretty limited. You know, you're just mixing drinks to kind of break up the action of chatting. It has a cool little feature where you can, every day, you can set the music that plays on the jukebox, and you can change it up whenever to kind of, like, set the mood yourself and control the ambiance, which I kind of like and I kind of don't, because I almost wish that the soundtrack was a little more curated for different moments. Mm-hmm. But it kind of, you know, adds to the idea that you're kind of sitting behind a bar and controlling that kind of stuff. So it's kind of a mixed bag in that regard. But the music is good. It's pretty cool music.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a fun game. You know, I'd recommend checking it out, giving it some time if you just kind of want something to kind of relax with. It's not. There's definitely not a lot of tension, and you have as long as you want to make the drinks. And
oh, nice.
Yeah. Okay. So there's the gamey elements are pretty limited.
Okay.
And the characters are like I said, mostly pretty cool. So I'd recommend.
Chance of this getting a Vita port?
It is getting a Vita port.
All right. There we go.
Yeah, I believe it's being worked on now. I don't know what the time frame is for release, but I think that after it was finished for PC, it was sent over to a guy who's working on that right now.
Sweet. So, I will wait for that.
Yeah, no, I think it'll be great on Vita. And I think it'll be worth your time to just kind of, like, because basically I was playing it on a laptop while chilling in bed, and that's pretty much where you want to be playing this game, kind of like while chilling in bed and just relaxing. So
nice.
Yeah, I think that pretty much covers it. I don't want to belabor it too long, but it's worth checking out if you have any interest in visual novels as a medium. And you have an attraction to cyberpunk and things like that. It kind of skirts around the edges of that sort of stuff without getting too deep. So it's nice.
Nice.
Also, another cool little bit, which I forgot to mention. Between days when you're bartending, you can dick around on your character's cell phone and read stories that help flesh out the world. And she'll comment to them. Like, she'll like, talk about them as you read them. And she provides voiceover for her own cat and has a conversation with him.
Awesome.
So that's cool. Awesome. It's a fun little game.
Fantastic. Yeah. I will play it when it comes out on Vita, since I like cyberpunk bartending. Jamie, you mentioned that you played and finished Doom, right?
Yeah, I was actually gonna, if you didn't bring it up, I was gonna be like, can we go back to Doom? I don't talk about that.
Let's address it, but I don't want to spend too much time on it, because we're already, you know, deep into the time limit here.
Mm-hmm.
So deep.
So, I think last we talked about it, you were maybe a third of the way through?
Yeah, I probably was about a third of the way through. That game's a little longer than I expected.
Yes, it is. What did you think of kind of the level... I don't want to say there's like a level change. I mean, there is a level change where the environment shifts. Did that give you a bunch of trouble, like it gave me trouble?
Talk to me a little bit more about what you mean.
Like... You know, you're in the Mars facility for kind of the beginning of the game, and then you go to, you know, the different location that's
hell.
Very much not
hell,
a facility.
Guys. You go to hell.
Yeah, you go to hell. Surprise, it's
Doom.
I've
never played the game, but you go to hell.
It threw me off when I first was going there, and I had troubles, you know, solving or navigating some of the rooms.
Really? Huh. Yep. I did not have the same issue. There were a couple times where I thought that... maybe where the placement of some of the door switches were a little confusing, and especially towards the end of the game when there are like warps between zones in the hell world, like I thought that got confusing. But I kind of mitigated that by just like having the map open almost constantly. And I spec'd into that one thing that, like, just makes things pop up on the map without you having to try too hard. Did you do that?
I don't know what that is. What is it?
There's, you know how there's, like, five things that you can spec into?
Oh, and, yeah, you're, yes. I think that was, I didn't put anything in that because they're already on the map.
I spec'd into that, and I think it was, like, helping me out a little bit with that stuff, maybe?
Maybe.
I don't know. But yeah, I'll agree that some of the maps towards the end got a little confusing, and they're so samey that you have a hard time, you know, realizing where you are because each room in hell looks identical to the last. And but overall, that game is incredible in my opinion. Absolutely, like, mind-bogglingly good. I saw a NeoGAF thread that I completely agreed with. Someone on NeoGAF wrote a thread, and it the gist of it was, like, the combat in this game is actually exhilarating. And I completely agree with that. I don't know how they managed it, but every single, like, usually in games, when you walk into a room and the door closes behind you and a bunch of enemies pop up, I hate that. Like, I absolutely hate that. I dread that.
See Bioshock Infinite discussion earlier.
Yeah. Exactly.
Or, like, but Uncharted, when you walk into the enemy zone and you're like, oh, right. Man.
But in this game, I look forward to that, and I know that it's going to be like, I'm going to literally be on the edge of my seat, and I know that I'm going to have to be thinking, and I'm going to have to be wondering, like, when should I use my BFG? When should I use my chainsaw? Oh my God, I'm down to 6 health. How can I stop myself from dying right now? So exhilarating. And then when you finish the room and the music dies down, and, you know, the little, like, it almost has the equivalent of, like, a Final Fantasy, like, look, you did it, and here's your, like, experience points.
Yeah.
Like, when that screen comes up, it's so rewarding.
So it's like the screen in Revengeance, when after you beat the thing, it's like, hey, here's your grade and some points.
It's not really like that. It's not like a separate screen. It's like, it, you know, you're obviously still walking around the world, but just this little thing pops up, and it's like, hey, look, you got some experience, and you're good. You're good for now. You can breathe.
That's good.
Yeah.
So good.
It does pacing, like, a lot of times you're like, oh, you know, Uncharted 4 had great pacing to it, but you're like, no.
Not, like, really.
Doom, well, I'm saying just, you know, Uncharted games have good pacing to them. But it's like, no, Doom really nails it in a way that most games don't, where you're dealing with traversal, you're dealing with item, you know, secret item finding, and then you're dealing with combat, you know, the big three. But it, the breaks between the action never feel too long or too lingering, and the combat, like, exhilaration, as Jamie said, is definitely, like, the biggest reward. So, you know, you clear the zone and you're like, oh, I can breathe and I can go poke around, but you've already probably found everything there.
Yeah.
Just in moving through the environment and fighting the enemies, because, you know, once you stop moving, that's when you die. You know, you need to be constantly strafing, running around, shooting shit.
So you're saying if the bus goes below 50 miles an hour...
Yeah, you're doomed.
Very much like Bayonetta 2, the way that you live is by, like, just running into combat. And in Bayonetta 2, you had to use your dodge, but in this, you have to use your special to get health and ammo from enemies. And if you're not doing that, you're going to die.
That's high praise, like, if it can achieve the same level of kinetic feel as like a platinum game.
Oh my God, yeah, totally. Yeah. That's, and if not, exceed it.
Wow.
It's a different context, you know, because you're dealing with a first-person shooter. But
Still,
I think the right way I think the right way to play this game is the way that I played it. I let it breathe. Like, I played it in hour chunks, so maybe like 12 chunks, and I feel like that's the right way to do it. Otherwise, I think it would feel a little bit samey. And if you do it the way that I did it, when the game ends, you, like, feel so pumped up. You're just like, oh my God, I need more. And, like, you just immediately start doing New Game Plus, because I don't even think there is New Game Plus. I just, like, up the difficulty and jumped right back in. Because it's like, I need more of this. This is, like, and it feels so unique. I don't think I've played, I loved Wolfenstein. I don't think I've played a modern shooter that feels anything like this.
No, not at all.
Okay. That excites me.
Yep, it reminds me of how I like to play first-person shooters as, like, an idiot. Like, when I'm playing... I remember playing Killzone 2, and it's like, I just broke the game because I just ran in, you know, headfirst and knifed my way through the entire game. Had no problems with that, because the game just didn't know what to do. You know, all the enemy AI is written around. Take cover, be careful. So when I just storm in there and stab them all, it breaks it completely. So this game is like, hey, we're on to you. We're on to you, Griff. So they made it for me, because now it's like, I just run in there, and I'm ready to fight and shoot and move and traverse and attack. And you know, there's no stopping and taking cover or crouching prone or anything like that. It's just get in there, get dirty.
In any other game where you would take cover, this game wants you to literally, like, jump into the air, land on a flying enemy, and rip it in half. That's what it wants you to do instead of taking cover.
That sounds right. Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Yep, it's fantastic. Doom is a great game. Speaking of anything else, Jamie? You want to cover before? I think
I played more
Jeff
Witcher.
Jeff and I run away.
Played what?
I played more Witcher 3. I've decided that I am going to beat that game. I've decided that I very much enjoy that game, and it might take me like 5 years, but Jesus Christ, I'm going to beat that game. That's such a good game. And I think that's pretty much it.
All right.
Jeff, let's talk about No Man's Sky and then take Pokemon Go into the news section. How does that sound?
Sure, yeah. I don't think we have much to say about Go anyway, in terms of just pure gameplay. I don't have much to say about it because I literally started the game and played it for like 20 minutes and got a little bit annoyed at it.
No Man's Sky, you're saying?
Yeah. Yes. I guess I'll say my bit and then you can tell me why it's going to get awesome soon. Okay. So I started No Man's Sky. I thought it was cool because I started on a planet and they're like, "Hey, this planet has toxic rain on it," and I was like, "Whoa, that's kind of neat. This feels inhospitable." And then it was like, "Hey, fix all this shit and go gather resources," and I was like, "Oh, all right, fine." And then I was just gathering resources, and then a little sentinel showed up and was like, "I'm gonna kill you because you shot a stalagmite," and I was like, "Ah." And then I tried to run away, and there's no run button, as far as I can tell. And then I tried to shoot it, and there was, like, 8 other sentinels there. And then the big bad sentinels came out with lasers, and then I died. And I was like, this game's annoying.
Whoa. Okay. That is a vastly different experience than I had.
So tell me about your experience, Griffin.
Well, okay, first of all, the most fascinating thing you said is you started on a planet with acid rain.
Yes.
I did, too.
Really?
Is that just the starting planet, and everybody starts from the same, like, planet?
No, but then you would see each other.
Multiplayer!
Yeah.
So wait, is the thing in this game that you can't see each other? Even
the thing in this game
planet?
Is that Sean Murray has said repeatedly that if you somehow ran into each other, you could see each other, but that's not true. He was just lying.
They've repeatedly said it's a multiplayer experience, but it's so infinitesimally unlikely that you would ever... it be on the same location at the same time that you would never experience seeing another person.
Turns out that it's just like not that unlikely because people have already tested it on 3 separate occasions and there's
exactly
nothing.
Yeah. And now they're backpedaling and saying like, well, it has something to do with the instancing.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. Yeah. They're just lying. The people have looked at the packets on PC and there's nothing being sent out and received.
Right.
Oh wow. Yeah.
So it's multiplayer in that, like, if you name this location, somebody else may potentially get there, and it's named Steve's Butt Planet or whatever.
It's clear they had development hurdles that they had to clear, and this was dropped somewhere along the line. They should probably just be upfront about it because it's really not that big a deal.
They really need to. So, okay, that is fascinating that you started on Acid Planet. So I was on Acid Planet too. But yeah, I did the same thing where I was like, I started gathering materials, repairing the ship. And, those sentinels will come and pester you if you start mining too much or whatever, and then you just shoot them.
Yeah, I didn't shoot them fast enough, I think.
I don't know how you managed to piss off the whole, like,
there was, like,
beastly
20
one.
Of them coming after me.
Okay, well, that's bizarre. The most I've ever had on me is, like, 3 or 4, and then a gigantic dog thing. So, that's really strange. Yeah.
As someone who hasn't played this game, this conversation is fascinating to me because it literally sounds like Jeff is being like, I tried to video game and I couldn't video game. And then Griffin, you're being like, you have to video game harder.
That's pretty much what happened. Bear in mind that I've been in a funky place when it comes to trying out video games, though. I'm definitely planning to give it like another solid couple hours today.
But you're totally right. Like, all those feelings that you have where you're like, oh, you said, I think you said the laser feels kind of piddly, and the direction to, like, just go gather minerals, and that all that stuff, you're absolutely accurate. Like, surprise, No Man's Sky is a resource management game.
Yeah.
Like, we knew it was happening. It's not just exploration, because it could not ever have been.
No,
so,
I'm okay with that. I think that it doesn't do the greatest job of introducing you to its systems.
Oh, no, it's terrible.
Yeah.
It's absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
And it only... I think that that's part of why I'm enjoying it as much as I am, and that I'm just kind of saying, okay, like, I'm going to go with the flow game. I'll figure things out as they come, and, you know, not worry too much about, you know, optimizing or doing the right thing at the right time, and just kind of going with the experience. And I'm not a huge fan of the resource management of, like, okay, there's gauges that are constantly depleting. I can never just take a moment and look. Like, there will never be a time in which it's just, here you go, enjoy. Enjoy the view. No. But there are things that I am really enjoying about it, like the language thing. Like, you collect words, and then you can understand conversations when you meet entities.
That's awesome.
And it's kind of goes into a puzzle-solving mechanic. But then again, it's like the rewards you get. You're like, oh, I get more elements, or I get a new blueprint or something like that. So in that regard, it's kind of lame. Mm-hmm. I just got another ship. So the progression that you get once you start moving with the spaceship is fun, mm-hmm. and that you can kind of see
how are the
worlds. that's kind of the other thing is, you know, with the diversity that they proclaimed and everything, it's like every world has pretty much the same checklist of red plant, blue plant, green plant, health plant, shield plant, and then fauna.
Okay, all right.
So
are the fauna, you know, cool?
Nope, it's been just a lot of tentacly crabs for me, and okay. shitty looking armadillo things. Yeah. I ran into one gigantic creature, but still I'm like, it's all right. I like the flying, and there's definitely like a real time aspect to the amount of like the if you're trying to travel to a location, you're gonna have to fly your ship there or walk there, and it might take an hour or 5 minutes in real life time.
Yeah,
and it'll give you that counter, and I'm like, that's kind of neat. So. I think that the I hate bringing Metacritic into valid discussion, but I think that the general standings of it being around, you know, 70% or so is very spot on. I think that this game suffered from overhype, overpromising, and of course cannot deliver on it. But what it is doing is it's fine. It's totally fine.
Okay. All right. I'm going to give it some more time and let it kind of show its riches to me. How deep are you in terms of gameplay, Griffin? Like, how many hours do you feel?
Oh, probably 5-6 at the most.
Okay. So the goal in the center of the universe, I hear, is like really, really far. Is that true?
I have no idea. I just kind of got the warp drive, and I'm able to do the big jumps to the center.
Okay, all right.
But I'd say the one thing that does really stand, you know, in the game's favor is... I have that option to just start pushing towards the center of the galaxy, and yes, then I'll just be at like a constant tug of war with resources, but I'm actually kind of just finally enjoying exploring a planet and mm-hmm. finding everything that it has on it and trying to locate all the wildlife and, you know, essentially clear one of these things out once. That's kind of my goal at the moment. And the progression, the march towards the center and the quote-unquote end game, it's not really doing anything for me.
Okay. But it sounds like you're getting into the vibe a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'll keep going and see where it takes me.
Sure.
So, thank you for sharing.
Oh, my pleasure. Then the other thing that we played was Pokemon Go, which I don't remember if we talked about on our E3 recap thing. I think we mentioned it.
We probably did. Yeah. I mean, it's. I think we both are in agreement that it's like not a good game, but it's a good friend game.
It's in fact a bad game, but it. It does some things that are pretty miraculous, which is like bringing people together from all sorts of, you know, walks of life to engage in this one experience.
It's turned a friend of mine into like a pretty big Pokemon fiend who just went and bought Pokemon stuffed animals.
Nice.
Who previously played no games.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I run into people at work and they're like hardcore obsessed with Pokemon Go. And I'm like, oh, are you looking forward to the new Pokemon game? They say, oh, I haven't played one since Silver.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, huh.
Yeah, same. Med school, a lot of people are just like, I was talking to a friend of mine who said that he actually hadn't played like a video game since Red and Blue.
Yeah.
And I was talking to him and he was fiddling with his phone and looked disinterested, and then he was like, you know what, I'm sorry, I am playing Pokemon Go right now and I can't stop, so can we just talk later?
I don't get why people are so like, I'm cool to just tag along and tell people what the Pokemon are, like, yeah, they'll be like, what's that one, and I'm like, oh, that's like that's Sandshrew, like it turns into this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'm like not even playing. People seem to really dig it for whatever reason, and I'm cool with that, like, you know, whatever.
People really dig it.
Oh, you've seen those dick pics.
Yes.
But anyway, yeah, it's,
yeah,
it does tend
to capture people in a way that I'm like, huh, how does it, I don't get it.
Yeah, it is a strange thing, and I'm cool to be along for the ride and be a person who's in the know about Pokemon and try to talk about it and make people excited about it.
Yeah.
Also, as a Nintendo investor, I'm going to demand that Sun and Moon also come out on mobile devices. It's the only way for Pokemon to rebound.
Yeah.
Guys, I need the bathroom in a surprise fashion. I'll be right back.
Okay.
He pooped himself.
Oh. Oh, no. Retrograde.
But yeah, no, it's, every time they update it, it does get a little bit worse, which is hilarious.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. Let's bring that into the news discussion here, which I have written down Pokemon Go upgrades, and I'll kind of take the flag at this point and say that, you know, the game came out and it had its problems with the tracking that was built into it.
Yeah, and the servers were pretty bad, which mercifully has
gotten
a lot better.
And server trash. Yeah, yeah. So with a series of upgrades, the first being a big one that kind of took out the tracking,
yeah.
And then it also, along with that, blocked third-party websites that were allowing people to kind of track where Pokemon were,
which
on
was
a worldwide.
So much fun. Like, it was not even game-breaking, I felt.
Yeah.
I don't feel like it's a game that really needs to be tamped down in terms of cheating, because the actual game part of it, where you've challenged gyms, is just the worst.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And, I mean, with having that tracker, it is nice, but I guess they came out and said that, yeah, that was really borking the servers, so...
Yeah, I mean, their reason is fine. It just kind of sucks, yeah, because it made it entertaining to, like, load up Pokevision and be like, oh, there's a Snorlax... Like, we found a Snorlax in Portland because of Pokevision, and it was awesome.
Nice. That's cool.
Yeah.
You know, with that, though, you're always running against the clock on it, so it can only be so useful.
That's true. Well, that was a nice limit, because they're only out for, like, what, 15 minutes? So it's like, Okay, you can Pokevision them, but if you're not close enough, then you're fucked anyway.
Right, exactly. So, and then I think they put in some other minor upgrades to just the UI and stability and things like that, which have been nice.
And
then finally, there's been another...
tracking update.
Update, yeah, that just fixed some odds and ends and then put grass into the tracking icons.
It's so much worse now. I can't... Stuff will pop up that's not on that list, and stuff on that list will just never appear.
Right.
It's so annoying.
That list has always been broken. I put no faith in it. But what is good, though, is they said that the UI may be different based on your marketplace, and people are saying that in San Francisco, they're doing, like, a test bed for what they're showing, or what they're going to do with tracking. And they're essentially, like, combining Pokevision into the game itself and showing, you know, the nearest stop that the Pokemon will be next to, and then showing its location on the map. So excellent changes if that does go through and work.
Yes, I agree with that. Yeah, for sure. Right now it's just so annoyingly random. Also, did you get the great, so have you seen the thing that comes up when you're driving?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's annoying.
I get it a lot of times when I'm just walking.
I'm sure Nintendo was like, you have to put that in.
Right. Like, don't trespass and play Pokemon Go.
Oh, that's annoying, too. Yeah, whenever you load the app now, it's like, don't have fun while you're playing this game.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it is an app, but it still remains a phenomenon for some reason, and I'm still along for the ride, even though I'm not playing it as much actively, although I did get an execute recently, and I was excited.
Oh, nice. I lost my goddamn mind when my egg hatched, and I got a Porygon.
You got a Porygon?
Yep.
Holy shit. Oh, that's
awesome. I was very happy about that. Yep.
Pokemon Go also provided me with an excuse to show some of my friends Pokemon stuffed animals that they were very excited
about. Well, I know Hunter's been playing a ton of it, too, and him and his friends found a cheat for it, which is fascinating. They do a GPS hack, which essentially allows them to be in any other location based on longitude.
Yeah.
So they're just like walking around San Francisco, you know, going to all the Pokestops there on their phone using a D-pad.
Dude, San Francisco has the best Pokemon, man.
Yeah. No, I mean, he has shown me what he's found there, and yeah. Now he's kind of, he's like, oh, I made a second account that's not a cheat account, so.
Yeah, because it could get banned. It's really cool. Yeah, that's wild, dude. I can't believe that people are getting so invested and, like, doing gamey shit with this game.
Yeah,
me too. I feel like I'm not on their nerd level. It's weird.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's because it's not a good game, but
yeah,
it's a fun experience.
It's just a strange role reversal, yeah.
Yep.
But, yeah, no, I think, is there anything else we need to say about Pokemon?
Well, about Pokemon at large, definitely.
Yeah. You excited about them Sun and Moon updates?
Oh, hell yeah. It's been slowly trickling out through Korokoro.
I think it's slowly trickling out for Jamie right now.
Maybe not so slowly. So we got a couple trailers.
Yeah.
We got a couple images of new Pokemons, and man, they look great.
They're so cool.
What's your favorite looking one?
I like the dumb sandcastle, and I love all the Alolan forms. Those I'm really excited about.
That sassy Meowth, oh my god.
Sassy Meowth is like, oh my god, so sexy.
Fanfic ready.
So many fan arts. Uh-huh. No, the Alolan forms are such a great idea, and I hope we see a lot of them. I don't know if this means we're not going to see Megas this time around, or how the Alolan forms will be balanced, but I think it's a great way to reintroduce old Pokemon and keep them fresh. Mm-hmm. And yep. I'm fine. I think they're going to keep them first generation, it looks like, but I'm cool with that. Like, I think it's almost perfectly timed with Pokemon Go to be like, mm-hmm. hey, check out these old guys you love, and they're not... It's not Megas this time, because that's kind of crazy and a little imbalanced, but, you know, now it's this cool alternate form thing where...
Yeah.
Where these guys that you know and love kind of are seen in an entirely new light. They maybe change their stats too. You know, stuff that wasn't viable before could become viable,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is awesome. I really am excited about that.
Yeah.
And I love the sandcastle. Who else do I like? I love
the
ghost.
Do you like that anime ass Marowak?
Yes, I do. I do, actually. I love the ghost fairy Pikachu one, the Mimikyu.
Oh, yeah, that thing is awesome.
It's nightmare.
I especially love this round of Pokemon because of the descriptions that are coming along with them, which is just, like, bringing Pokemon into one of the most, like, darkest territories it's been ever.
Well, especially with Mimikyu, where it's like he's mimicking the merchandise because he just wants someone to love him.
Right, yeah. or the sandcastle, which is, like, a Pokemon died in the sand, and now its soul is inhabiting this castle.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Jesus.
Or the Marowak is, since it's a ground-type Pokemon, and it's in a grassy jungle, it needed to evolve further to defend itself, and these Marowaks that become fire-type are essentially protecting their tribe from predators, because all of their family keeps getting killed, is what the description says.
Jesus Christ.
Like,
I'm a little bummed in the trailers that everything just seems like pushovers. Like, every enemy that I see, it's like, oh, they have two Pokemon.
Oh.
And yeah. They're like a Zubat.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, this game's gonna be so goddamn easy. I hope it has a post-game.
Right. It's still for kids. Can't forget that.
It's still for kids, but they have tossed bones to older people before. And I worry that they're not gonna do that enough. But we'll see.
Yeah. Yep.
If they could just drop a hard mode. Like, just give me a hard mode where everyone has more Pokemon on their higher level. I know it's a hassle, but please, I beg you.
Well, speaking of a Pokemon hard mode, maybe you could play Pokemon Uranium?
It's so fan gamey. The nuclear type, guys.
The Pokemon become corrupted, and then they gain abilities that they wouldn't ordinarily have. And then you can't control them.
It's like, I don't... That's not what I want.
You just described any other Pokemon story, Jeff.
No, but it's just dumb. Like, I don't care about your fake mons. Don't do that
to me. I read up on it today, and I was like, this may be something that I could play and check out and get a little, like, Pokemon satisfied in there. But after I looked at all their, like, fan-created thing, I'm like, this just lacks...
They don't have the character of real Pokemon. Even, like, people bitch about... Well, pardon my language. They complain about, like, oh, they look so dumb now, they look like Digimon now, they look like Yo-Kai Watch or whatever. And it's like, you know what? They still have more going on than anything you assholes can dream up.
Yeah.
Oh, and also, I don't have a problem with Digimon or Yo-Kai Watch, so sure.
Yeah, no, there's no problem there for me either, but it's I don't know. I understand why people are so excited about that game, but I just can't get past how bad they all look.
But I think that you can't get it now anyway, because they...
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, it was downloaded 1.5 million times. You could probably find it somewhere.
Right, but Nintendo has gone up there and started pulling mirrored links, and I think they gave the cease and desist to the company or to the creators to say, you got to take this down.
Well, no, the creators just pulled it of their own volition. They were getting takedowns elsewhere, but the creators pulled it before Nintendo could C&D them.
Okay. Okay. But I know Nintendo was pursuing Lynx and having them shut down.
They were, yeah. Was the Metroid 2 remake C&D'd? I don't even know.
Yes.
I think so.
I know it was pulled from other sources as well, but I never heard definitively whether the creator got a C&D.
Fairly certain that one happened.
I did grab that one before it was pulled, so if you guys are interested.
That would be illegal, Jeff.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm talking about I grabbed the description of it. So if you guys are interested in the description
And paste that and send it my way.
Yeah, it's only a 72 megabyte description, so.
Oh, man, that's a big text file.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's a visual novel, of course.
Yeah. The videos that I saw of it, the first 30 minutes or so of it, were pretty good, actually.
Were they interactive videos?
Yeah, they were interactive videos that I manipulated using my controller. And they seemed pretty good, yeah.
Oh, cool. A DVD menu. Yeah, I gotcha.
Pretty much, yeah. The remote controller.
Cool. Yeah, I want to check that out, so maybe I will watch some videos as well.
Yeah, I'll put some videos on Dropbox or something.
Perfect.
What else is happening in the world?
Let's see here. Oh, I think the biggest news is, well, okay, we're at about an hour here, so let's get the actual facts out of the way and then spend a little time speculating. So, Final Fantasy XV delayed again. It looks like there's some images leaking from GameStop kiosks or whatever showing a sticker that you place over the, was it September 3rd,
15th 29th? Or 30th or something.
Yeah, now it's pushed to November 29th, which I just say, fuck it, kick it to 2017.
Maybe just, like, never release it. It looks
or put it in the
bad.
Garbage, yeah, that's fine.
I'm pretty sure this is legit. A lot of places are reporting on it, and the stuff that's coming out looks pretty real. Although I am currently looking at a Reddit thread where somebody says, there is no delay, these rumors are absolutely false, and the people writing those articles should be fired. So, I don't know.
Sounds like Reddit.
Griffin and I have talked about this game, Jamie, and I don't know what your impressions of it are, but we're super, super not excited about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So given how, like, it looked, just speaking graphically, like in the demo and also things that people have commented on in articles, it just looks so, jagged, and it looks like they haven't worked out the kinks in their engine yet. I fully expected at least some form of delay, just for the graphical side.
Yeah.
And then given
Well, they had
how,
like no anti-aliasing, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, like absolutely none. And then
it looked
given
good,
how
though, I thought.
Given how the demo was received at E3, I wouldn't be surprised if they were trying to tweak the gameplay a little bit as well.
I just feel like they're when they talk about the development, I just get nervous. I'm like, so wait, this game is coming out in like 3 months and you're redoing the UI? Like, what is going on here?
Oh, those before and after pictures of the UI are amazing, too. Where it's like, it's very sparse, very, you know, clean looking, where it's essentially just one menu with one piece of interaction on it, and then the new menu is like somebody threw up a bunch of Campbell's soup all over their TV screen or a bunch of alphabet soup.
The problem is there doesn't appear to be any real depth to it, and no amount of like cool spell effects or anything else is going to make this like a game that is actually strategic.
Yeah,
as far as I can tell. And I would love for them to have grafted strategy in the past year, but I don't believe it.
Nope.
So I don't know. I welcome the delay, I guess, because I'm not excited for the game.
Right.
I don't see what 2 months is really going to do.
Yeah. I'm also worried, too, because they've gone on record several times saying, like, this is the make or break for Final Fantasy. Like,
yep.
This is it, guys.
Yep. There was a big old 4chan leak, which I looked at because I'm really not invested. And it's not clear whether or not it's real, but if we're to take it at face value, some of the statements are like, there is no Final Fantasy after this. Like, they're waiting to see how this does.
Yeah. Which is even more interesting, because what does that mean for Final Fantasy VII Remake?
I think that's still going to happen, but I think this is it. I think the reason this FF7 Remake is happening is because that brand is in a far deeper crisis than I think people realized.
Right, that's what I've always said. It's like break glass in case of emergency, and that's your Final Fantasy VII Remake
doing.
Behind it. That's
yeah.
We're there, guys.
It's just wild. I mean, it's I don't know how it fell so far so quick, because I don't know. I guess Final Fantasy XIII really was bad.
Yep.
So it's surprising how a series that has endured for so long could be derailed so quickly. But I guess when everyone's gone, who was making it, it's not that big of a surprise.
Right.
Except and also, all right. They identified the completely wrong... I was reading an article, I think in Game Informer, about their motivations behind the game. And they looked back at Final Fantasy VII and they said, what made Final Fantasy VII amazing at the time? And instead of realizing that it had like more of a deeper story than anything at the time offered or anything like that, they were like, they came to the conclusion that the reason why Final Fantasy VII was successful was because of the graphics.
Didn't they also say that it was like marketed to teens or something?
Something ridiculous like that. And it's like, no, you have no idea why your game succeeded.
You just don't get it.
Yeah.
Make cool characters. Like, think about them. Think about making them interesting.
No, we don't need any more cool, quote-unquote, square characters.
Well, I mean, yeah, FF7 actually had some pretty weak characters kind of in the back end. But their primary characters were interesting and had depth to them.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, they've proven that they cannot do it.
Their version of cool characters are they all wear black.
It's all zippers and angst.
So I don't know. I would love to be proven wrong, but I am not. I don't think it's going to happen.
All right. Well, speaking of things that aren't going to happen, let's talk about this weird PlayStation handheld chip that potentially could be coming out, and the amazing speculation surrounding Matrix themes that have come with that.
Was this like a Jeff Rigby thread or something?
I don't know what's Jeff Rigby?
He's the guy who posted. He has that enduring thread that keeps popping up on Gaff about how Ultra HD consoles were released in 2013. Have you seen that one?
Uh-uh.
He had this axe to grind where he was talking about how he was convinced the original PS4 could play Ultra HD Blu-rays, which is just not happening. And he, like, backs it up with all this technobabble.
Uh-huh.
He's kind of legendary on Gaff. Anyway, go ahead. Tell me what was this? What did this thread say? Because I saw it, but
I didn't read it. The short and long is I don't have the details, and the specs mean nothing to me. So I'm sorry, guys. I know you like that stuff, but I don't know what that is. Anyway, there was some kind of mobile chip that came out as in production by Sony, and it is it has some parity with like the progression from PSP to Vita. So the speculation was that now this will be a Vita successor, and then the Gaff took it and ran, saying that this is part of a three-part project by Sony, being one, Project Morpheus, two, PlayStation Neo, and the third handheld console, the Trinity.
Did you hear the great Twitter hot puns about that?
Yes.
About how Trinity dies.
Yeah.
In the Matrix.
Not like this, yep.
I'm looking at the thread now. I'm curious.
I mean, it's only interesting because of the Nintendo rumors, you know, that are and facts that they're going to come up with in the next month or so about their new device. So it's like, well, maybe Sony is going to try and jump in some handheld market again and try and, you know, do some brand sabotage sort of a thing, and having this in the back burner, you know, it's probably not true, but it just makes, with the context of Nintendo, you know, producing their next thing here soon, maybe they will do some sort of mobile-focused device.
Yeah, I guess, from what I'm reading on this, it looks like it's just a wireless chip, and they think that they'll just put out, like, a Vita 3000.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know why they would do that, but maybe they feel there's some money to be made. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or just maybe it was on the roadmap long ago, and they're just like, well, push this thing out the door. Screw it.
Yeah. Yep. We and who can see. Say?
And Jeff Brewer will buy one. We know we have one customer.
It just makes for an interesting discussion because of all the NX stuff that's finally coming out now.
Yeah.
And we're seeing, you know, Jeff, I think I owe you some time to take the NX rumors.
Sure, yeah, I'll just
go for it.
I think I'm just going to use my time because I'm not a Budinsky kind of guy. I'm going to use my time to just talk about what has come out about the NX and what it. We can all kind of talk about what it may mean and how you guys feel about it and stuff like that. But I'll say everything I know and things that we think we know. So the big story that was broken by Eurogamer and then backed up by a lot of other major outlets, some of whom are going to be apparently auctioned off next week. You guys hear about that? Kotaku is going to go. Yeah. Yep. Pretty sad. Fucking Hulk Hogan. Anyway. So the big thing that came out is the NX, despite all indications to the contrary, is going to be a hybrid device. It's going to be a portable that can serve as a console. And this it's big. I mean, it's big news, and it's weird news, and I don't necessarily think it's news that is tailored for U.S. markets, but it is news, all right. So the big scuttlebutt or whatever is that it's going to be based off of NVIDIA's Tegra X1 platform, I think it was, which is it's currently out in their Shield tablet. I guess Eurogamer was looking at clocks and determined that it could achieve performance above a PS3, above a 360, probably above a Wii U, but far below an Xbox One. And also we're looking at a power envelope of, I don't know, 10 watts or something, if even. So this is a very weird device. And there's some speculation that it could be using the next generation of Tegra hardware, which is based off NVIDIA's Pascal architecture, which would be big because, I mean, in the graphics card space, Pascal, led to like 60% improvement in performance. So you could be looking at a similar jump. So this could be a product that, in a portable form factor, achieves performance that doesn't match current gen consoles, but comes close to. We're going to call them base Xbox One hardware, since there's other stuff coming down the pipeline, or base PS4 hardware, in a portable form factor. And other weird details are that this is going to include detachable controllers, possibly two, that could be used for multiplayer, although other patents point to maybe only one. And it also is going to use cartridges, which is a weird thing. I guess Nintendo had suggested starting at 32 gigabytes, which is about achieving parity with Blu-rays. But this is a very strange device. It is a device that I guess will be portable first, and maybe will include some sort of docking solution to allow for console play. And it maybe will involve like having clocks that are processor clocks that are reduced when the device is in portable mode and increased otherwise. Although it's not entirely clear. It's not clear what the resolution will be of the base hardware. Maybe it'll run at 540p. Maybe it'll run at 720. There are a lot of huge question marks, and it is a very strange move. I'm thrilled because I would love to play Breath of the Wild on a portable device rather than my Wii U. but that's just my myopic perspective. I think that people are going to have a hard time swallowing this, I'll be honest.
Can I make a prediction?
Sure.
So, it's going to be a portable device that you can put on a dock, and the dock will be connected to your TV, and then you can play it on the TV. But it will also come with, or there will be available, like a Samsung Gear VR style headset, and you can put it into the headset, and you can put it on your face.
Oh, your face is the dock.
Your face is the dock. But it'll be terrible VR. I guarantee that this thing will have a 1080 screen.
You think so? I don't think so.
You think it'll be higher than 1080?
I think it'll be lower than 1080.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, yeah.
720 or 540. I think 540, personally, is the magic number, but I think I'm in the minority.
If it was 540, I would be shocked in a bad way.
The Vita's 540.
Is the Vita 540?
The Vita's 540. That. Yep. And that's a crisp-looking device.
It is. It is. I would still be shocked.
I just think people, I don't know, the resolution arms race is I think, somewhat a fool's errand when you're making console hardware of any kind.
I completely agree, but to say that, to put out something in 540 in this day and age wouldn't be to not engage in the arms race at all. It would be to, like, blow yourself up.
Okay, so maybe 720. Maybe 720. I don't know. I think but 1080 we'll see. is... I would be surprised because you're giving up so much, and when you have a portable form factor, unless it's a mobile phone, I just don't think that it's going to matter for actual gameplay to really up it that much. Like, I think obviously it'd be nice, it'd be crisp, it'd be beautiful, it'd be unprecedented, but I think that what you give up, I mean, 720 to 1080 is doubling the pixel count.
I agree, but I'm worried because I do think that they're going to. I really think that they're going to target VR in some way, and, mm-hmm. and the lower pixel count leads to the screen door thing, and that would just suck.
Mm. Yeah,
I think you might be in the minority there, Jamie, thinking that they are going some VR direction.
I know. I realize that is not like.
I don't know. I think it's a very interesting concept. I think something modular is going to be happening because the other piece that I didn't get to touch on was this interesting patent that just came out that was filed in January, February of 2016 about the IR blasters. Did you guys read that one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So essentially, the way they're handling their detachable controllers sounds... I don't know if this is definitely going to happen on the NX, but it is a very interesting concept. I guess this is how they did the CirclePad Pro as well. But they're basically going to have... Or the patent said that it would, essentially you could allow for controllers with no electronics in them that would simply have like coded IR readers on the buttons that could be read by little IR cameras in the primary device. So I think that what they're going to be trying to do, if that is in the NX, is having this strange modular approach where a lot of different things can happen with the base device. Part of that being different control inputs, maybe part of that being some crazy VR shit. Like, I don't even know what is going on.
Yeah, I mean, and also, again, this is rumors, and that's a patent that is like a shitty line drawing that doesn't really mean anything.
But, oh, for sure, yes. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it's just something to speculate based on. I mean, the only thing we know closer to for sure is what Eurogamer reported, which I think has been independently verified by a lot of different sources.
If you look back on it too, that original patent where it was like that oval shaped thing with like weird buttons that are actually part of the screen or something, and then all those leaks that quote unquote came out and were blown up gaff.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah, okay, you just took that line drawing and made a Photoshop image of it. Great. Yeah. So
yeah, but I mean,
I think there's more credence with the...
Yeah, I mean, we still could be looking at a freeform screen, though. I mean, we don't know. I mean, maybe the screen envelops the analog sticks. We really have no idea.
Right.
There's so many questions that are raised by this. I think it is definitely fascinating, and I think it's probably a better approach to the Wii U than the Wii U, if that makes sense. But
I'm nervous about docking station, though, because that is not a mass market thing. That's something for us.
It is, and I don't... That's kind of where I'm at, too. Like, I was optimistic about the Wii U, even though maybe I shouldn't have been. I don't know how this... Because I think that handhelds in the U.S. are not... what they were.
Right.
I don't know, and some, you know, there are some rumors that they're maybe targeting smartphone gamers who want to upgrade. I don't know where the market is, other than Nintendo fans. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see where it is. I'd love to be wowed by whatever they bring out, and I think it's going to be something funky, to say the least. Mm-hmm. They have a very narrow line to walk.
Yep.
So it is. I'm fascinated. I mean, I'm fascinated because Breath of the Wild is an awesome looking game, and to play that on that hardware, I'm really excited about personally.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm happy to even play it on the Vita or the Wii U, of course.
Oh, of course, yeah. But to play it on this new fresh hardware that maybe I don't even have to be in front of a TV to do, which I love personally. I love playing in bed. Thrills me. So I think that'll be a great launch title. And I think that there's probably other stuff that's been held back that will hopefully be launch window or launch titles. Mm-hmm. I think that'll be cool. I think it'll be a great Nintendo device. But I don't know what's next. I don't know what the plan is. And much as this stuff makes me giddy like a little kid, it also makes me nervous.
Well, it's what, about a month away is when they're supposed to be... There's nothing official, right? But there's a rumor that Nintendo is going to be... Yeah. Launching their information campaign on what the NX is in September.
Yeah, on the heels of what will probably be the Neo reveal on September 7th.
Yeah.
For PlayStation. So
right on.
Weird times. Definitely
things are happening.
Times. Do you think they'll hit that March date?
What March date?
For NX. They talked about it launching in March of next year.
Oh, I don't know. Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I think they've been so mysteriously quiet about it that, they probably do have their game plan ready to go.
One of the big rumors was that they were waiting for Pascal to... That was like the thing that they needed to make this a reality, which would be
interesting. Waiting for Pascal is my favorite independent film that won Sundance.
I'm excited for them to incorporate... Like, that was... Because that would line up with a lot of rumors. Like, it's going to have a very modern GPU, but maybe not a very strong GPU. So that would be... Pascal would fit that bill very well, in that it could probably achieve a lot with a little.
Gotcha.
So that would be very cool. But it's exciting times, and I hope that they nail the price. I hope that they don't screw it up like they did with the Wii U. I hope that something exciting happens. I hope that Nintendo is revitalized, but I am also very scared.
Right on.
Pokemon on a console.
Guys. That's I think that'll be it for this podcast. We've reached a good time limit here. We got to wind it down. So, sure. Anybody have any quick thoughts on what they want to take a bet on, if anything, right now, or should we just wrap it up?
Did they announce the new Mario game? with the NX?
Well, I think that we're looking kind of too far down the line with that. Like, is there something happening here in the week, next week or so?
Oh, I have one. I have one. Unless we podcast before then, are you cool with making bets about the Neo?
Yeah, let's take that. That's fine.
Okay. So, do you think the Neo will be as the spec leak has indicated, or do you think they will upgrade it?
I don't know what the spec leak is. Maybe do you have that offhand?
I think it was like 4.5 teraflops as opposed to 6 with Xbox One. Is that right, Jamie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to bet that they do not.
Okay.
I'm going to bet that these things are already in production. I'm going to bet that it comes out relatively soon. And I don't think that they would, like, pull everything to a halt and stop everything that they set in motion to catch up with Microsoft, because they're already going to beat them in terms of when this thing comes out.
Hmm.
So that's my prediction.
Yeah. I'm going to say spec upgrade, because they did that bait and switch with the RAM on PS4 at E3. And I think that's what they do now. I think they leak stuff. I think they allow stuff to come out to influence their competitors and then change it. So I'm going to bet that they do.
So you think they're going to come out and be like, oh, by the way, ours is 8, motherfuckers.
Something like that. Something like that. I don't know if it's going to be at parity with the Scorpio hardware, but I think they're going to upgrade it a little bit.
So I'm going to kind of take a little column A and B here together and say that, yes, it will be upgraded from their original announcement, but it won't be something that they hammer home during the press conference. They won't be talking teraflops and how, it giving hard numbers. It'll be more of like soft math, kind of like, and it'll look 8 times better, that sort of marketing. So
no,
then
Griffin,
when it comes down to
8X.
It, people will pull it
8X
apart.
Improvement.
Yeah, 8Xs. It'll be when people actually tear it apart, they'll realize, oh, it's this kind of increase and upgrade or whatever. But they won't. They'll just say that it's better than what we initially promised. But
how do they show it? How do they make it? Again, I don't want to. Well, okay, we'll find out soon how they make a case for this thing. I think it's really hard to make a case for an improvement like this.
Yep, sure is. So we'll find out. I guess.
Yeah. I guess we will.
Yeah. Thanks for talking, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Jeff Brewer, James Shearer. I've been Griff Hoffman, and we'll see you next time on Boss Bear Radio.
Bye. Yes, I'm done, Jessica.
Really?
I want to be the best that ever was, to beat all the rest. Yeah, that's my cause.
Electro, Diglett, Nidoran, Mankey, Venusaur, Rattata, Firo, Pidgey, Seaking, Jolteon, Dragonite, Gastly, Ponyta, Vaporeon, Poliwrath, Butterfree.
Catch 'em, gotta catch 'em all. Pokemon!
I'll search across the land, look far and wide. Release from my hand the power that's inside.
Venomoth, Poliwag, Nidorino, Golduck, Ivysaur, Grimer, Victory Bell, Boltrace, Nidoking, Farfetch'd, Abra, Jigglypuff, Kingler, Rhyhorn, Clefable, Wigglytuff.
Catch 'em, gotta catch 'em all. Gotta catch 'em all.